virtual breakfast. It's kind of a new platform that we're trying out this year to allow a really nice opportunity for specialists, field educators, and agribusiness to connect with timely topics, in-season information, doing it early in the morning to give an opportunity to everybody to get up, get the information, and get on the way. Our first segment today is going to be Dr. Christy Sprague. She's going to be talking about early season weed control. So I'm going to turn it right over to Christy. She's going to have an opportunity to talk for 10 minutes. Questions, approximately 5 minutes afterwards. If you have questions, put them in the chat pot and we'll get them answered. So Christy.
Thanks, Paul. And good morning, everybody. We'd definitely like to thank you for participating, and we'll see if we can get this up and going. And I'd like to say that I brought donuts this morning, but I didn't, but hope everybody's having a good morning. It's a beautiful morning out, and looks like we'll get some decent temperatures by later in the day. What I really wanted to do is just kind of touch on early season weed control, especially as we start looking at where things are at. This has just kind of been a weird year, in that it's been relatively cool and wet. So one of the things, and I'm sure Jeff will talk about this when he gives the weather update, is that we're really behind on growing degree days. And one of the things is I was kind of looking at a lot of our plots and fields and just driving around the state. We're not seeing quite as much green as we normally do at this time of year. And I just kind of did a quick comparison to last year as far as growing degree days. And we're about three times less than what we were. And this was looking back on April or a couple days ago. And you can see here what we were at in 2017 versus 2018. And this is just right here around campus. So, you know, we're not getting that weed growth that we normally see. So these are just a couple pictures I took a couple days ago. You can see really not a lot of green out in the fields. So that's one of the things that, you know, normally by now we're getting some burn down applications on. And so, as you know, things, we've been slow on getting field work done just because it's been cooler and wetter. But as we start to see temperatures warm, obviously we're going to see some increased weed growth. These pictures right here, basically what we have is we're looking at, you know, generally what we kind of typically see around this time of year as we go forward. So the picture on the bottom left, you can see basically mare's tail that has come up. This was actually a picture that I took basically this time of year two years ago. So you can see where we're at as far as a little bit slower this year. But again, those weeds will start growing pretty quickly as those temperatures start to warm. And as we see that, we're going to really start to see really that competition for some of our field operations. You know, people are getting really antsy to get in the field and get planting. You know, so it's like, do we plant, do we till, do we spray? So it's all those things that we really need to consider. One of the things that I really want to get across this morning is it's really going to be important to make sure we're getting early season weed control. Even though we don't have that huge weed growth that we generally see this time of year, those weeds are out there. They're going to start taking off pretty soon. So we want to make sure that we are controlling them. And main reasons, obviously, that is going to interfere with, you know, these weeds can be a detriment to both planting and tillage operations. And then they're basically going to be pretty competitive with whatever crop that you grow. They can also harbor some pretty destructive insects, things like black cutworms, seed corn maggot. And, you know, in the past, we've seen that where some of these have really served as a host for soybean cyst nematode. And then as those weeds get bigger, they are definitely more difficult to control. One other thing I thought I would mention is obviously with the mare's tail horseweed issues that we're seeing around the state, because of the resistance issues, many times we're just not able to control that particular weed post-emergence, particularly if we're in a Roundup Ready situation or a non-GMO soybean situation. You know, with some of the new technologies, the Liberty Link soybeans, or even the Xtend soybeans, you know, and then again, there's a lot of restrictions for use on, especially on the Xtend beans. You know, we really need to be thinking about trying to make sure that we get control, particularly of things like mare's tail or horseweed early in the season. So obviously, there's a couple different ways we can do that. We can do that with tillage. Again, really with tillage, we want to make sure we're ripping up those weeds. So good uniform disturbance of the top couple inches. And then also remember that like vertical tillage tools are not always going to be that effective on certain weed species. So again, with the smaller weeds that we have this year, some of the tillage operations are probably going to be a little bit more effective than what we've seen in the past because of that slower weed growth. Obviously, effective burn down herbicide applications are going to be important. One of the things I really wanted to stress is if we're not getting that good weed control early in the season, we can see some reductions in soybean yield. And this is just some data that we had done several years ago looking at what effect delaying that burn down application actually has on yield. And we're looking at soybeans here. And you can see the later we wait, so for soybeans are at unifoliate stage, first trifoliate, third trifoliate, we're just seeing kind of a stair step decrease in yield. So again, really important to have that early season weed control. And when we looked at this a little bit different, you could start thinking about anywhere from like waiting from a unifoliate to V1 soybeans, we could lose about a quarter bushel per acre per day just by not controlling those weeds early in the season. So again, just really trying to make sure that we're getting good control. I just wanted to put this up here briefly. I know we only have a few more minutes left for this before we start answering questions. But again, we've got a lot of different potential options for burn down in soybeans. You can see here a good listing. A lot of this information is the weed guide. And as we start again for that competition with whether we plant or do burn downs, remember that some of these have to be on several days prior to planting if we're using something like the new product Elvor. And these ones are really focused on trying to get good control of herbicide resistant or glyphosate and ALS resistant mare's tail. And remember with 2,4-D ester, we're looking at a 7-day prior to planting. So again, just to point that out, but we do have several options we can use from burn down standpoint, whether it's just trying to get mare's tail control or control. A lot of these are pretty broad spectrum. The other thing just to point out with those burn down applications, we want to make sure we get some residual herbicides out there. As far as our key groups and looking at trying to control the resistant mare's tail species, as well as some of the water hemp and getting a good start on water hemp and Palmer amaranth, kind of the two groups that we're really looking at are things like the group 14 herbicides, which are the Valor type products or the Authority type products for sulfentrazone. And then metribuzin for sure for the horseweed, and then those combinations to help with that. So again, getting those residuals out there. We've got a lot of different premixes that have some of these components in there. We can add some things, but again, it's this good burn down with a residual, particularly for good mare's tail control. We do have that fact sheet that can be found on the website or in the weed control guide that kind of outlines a lot of these steps. And again, I'm really focusing on the horseweed mare's tail just because that's become such a huge problem throughout the state. One other thing I wanted to point out is with a lot of our burn down herbicides and also some of our residuals, a lot of these need to be put on our soil applied herbicides prior to soybean emergence. So again, it's not one of those things where we go out there and plant and, you know, wait 5-7 days to try to get that application. We do have some situations if we're using the Xtend beans and using dicamba, we can do that. Or if we're using Liberty Link beans and Liberty, we can also do that. But again, getting a lot of those residual products out there, those really have to be on, most of them have to be on before those soybeans emerge. Just wanted to mention corn briefly. Same thing, we want to start clean with a good residual herbicide. One key thing about that is we do have some tolerances to some of the soil applied products. There is a really nice table in the weed control guide, table 1H, where you can look at which ones can be applied up to a certain point so we can get those residuals out there. Also, just want to mention one quick thing on wheat. Looks like we got about a minute or so. As you know, things get warmer, we're really going to start trying to get some of that weed control in winter wheat. Key things, making sure that we make applications when the weeds are actively growing. We're starting to get some warmer temperatures. That's going to be important. We don't want to apply those at herbicide applications when that crop is under stress. And one of the good rules of thumb is really to only apply those herbicides when the daily temperatures are at 50 degrees or higher. So that's kind of where we want to be at from a weed application side. Other things to consider, if you have frost-seeded red clover, we're looking at using MCPA. If you're going to be putting some nitrogen on, we've got some good guidelines in the weed control guide and really making sure we're matching up the herbicides that we need for the wheat growth stage. And we'll have an article in the MSU Weed News on that. One thing I did want to, one last picture. This is our wheat plots 2 days ago, and this is some of the rough stock bluegrass growth. So we're really looking at trying to make sure we're getting some of those herbicide applications on now. So this is kind of a newer weed that we're seeing. And we've got a study looking at fall applications and some different timings in the spring. So again, just kind of scout those wheat fields. If you start seeing some grasses, we've got some decent grass products to control some of those grass weed species. So with that, again, good resources. We'll have some information. We've got the weed control guide on our MSUweeds.com website. And there are still MSU, or there are weed control guides available at MSU stores. So with that, I'll answer some questions if there's any anybody has.
Okay, Christy, thank you very much. I'm going to open it up for questions. I don't see any in the chat room at this point. So anybody questions for Christy this morning?
Paul, I have a question for Christy, and that would be on the rough stock bluegrass. Do you have any recommendations currently for that, Christy, that you could share?
Sure. Last year, we did some work, and Phil really want to thank you for getting us in contact with the cooperator on that. But in wheat, we have seen some really good activity from spring applications of both either Osprey or Power Flex. Those are probably our two stronger herbicides that we could use. So if you're starting to see some grasses, both of those cover a lot of different grasses. So if you've got windgrass as a problem, that's another one that they're both very good on. And we actually had some pretty good results thus far from our fall applications of both those herbicides.
Okay, thank you, Christy.
All right, thank you.
With that, I appreciate everybody participating this morning in our first virtual breakfast. And I'd want to remind everybody that the coffee's always hot and the donuts that we serve are all calorie free. So with that, have a good day, everyone. Next up, we have Jeff Andresen. Jeff tells me that he's got some really good news for the group. So, Jeff, I'm going to turn it over to you. If you can share your screen, then the floor is yours.
Good morning. As Paul mentioned, and as Christy mentioned, she used the words warmer, which we haven't been able to use that much this spring, but that's definitely the direction that we're headed. We do have some cool weather for the next couple of days, but again, in the, I think the big picture and looking at the upcoming week, some significant changes are taking place, and I'll talk about those here in just a second. The and Christy made reference to this. I think it's important to note with regard to our degree day situation right now, we're running well behind. This is from EnviroWeather. These are base 50 Fahrenheit seasonal accumulations or degree days. These are the actual values through, these go through early on Wednesday. And you can see for most of the state, we have about 40 to 45 units or less. And as Christy mentioned, right on the money, that these are a fraction of where we were last year. And they're a fraction of normal. In terms of these accumulations relative to calendar normal, these are the normal accumulations. And again, we should have, in many cases, at least 100 units. If we do the arithmetic and look at it compared to normal, that leaves the vast majority of the state at least two calendar weeks behind where we typically are. So that isn't a big surprise. However, it is important to also note that given the warmer weather of the last few days, especially on Monday when we went up to 70 degrees again for the first time in a while, that there has been definitely a recent green up over southern and even some central parts of the state. In the far north, there's still some ice and snow around, and it's still a little bit further behind there. But the other thing of note, too, is looking at evapotranspiration, potential evapotranspiration rates over the last week. We've had some values up between a 1/15 and 2/10 of an inch per day, which are pretty respectable values, and that has dried out, at least begin to dry out the top part of the soil profile. So some significant changes. We can see it in the volumetric soil moisture contents, which are now, well, they've dropped off significantly from where they were a few weeks ago. So there has been drying. So all these things collectively are pointing towards some opportunities coming up, and some people have used the recent warmer and drier weather. And certainly we will have another opportunity here coming up next week, and that's where I'm headed next. In terms of our short range outlook here, this is looking at the next 48 hours. Move that over just a little bit. Beginning today, we have high pressure over the region today, and it's going to be a beautiful day today on Thursday with high pressure. A little bit cool and a little bit windy, and it will be cooler in the vicinities of the lake with a decent lake breeze, but most areas should see full sunshine and high temperatures up to near normal values, mostly mid to upper 50s north and low 60s south. But by this evening and late overnight, we have another weather system here approaching from the northwest. That's our next chance for any precipitation. But the system is moisture starved, and you can see as it makes its way east and southward, it brings some scattered light rain to the state. There could be still some snowflakes mixed in far northern parts of the state, but this is not a major precipitation producer, at least the first round of this. Probably only some sprinkles or a few hundredths of an inch for an accumulation. There is another secondary chance of precipitation after the front goes through tomorrow. This is looking at the forecast as of tomorrow night. Friday evening, we will have a chance of some showers and maybe again a few snowflakes mixed in. It will be cooler behind the front. But then by Saturday morning, high pressure, and this is Canadian high pressure, so we will have cooler conditions for Saturday move in, and we should have gradually improving conditions on Saturday. That sets the stage for our big warming trend, and that's the major weather feature, I guess, or major weather trend of note here. After Saturday, and after a cool day on Saturday, high temperatures only in the 50s, maybe even some upper 40s across the northern part of the state, so it'll be well below normal. But a noticeable and significant warming trend begins on Sunday and then continues on into at least the first half of the work week next week. And we will be looking at temperatures by Monday in many parts of the state at or above 70 degrees during the daytime. And then more, just as importantly, low temperatures only falling into the 40s and the 50s. So we will be going above normal, significantly above normal. And by Tuesday, and this is hard to believe, it's been since last October, we could say that, I think we will have a few locations in the southern part of the state that reach 80 for a high temperature. Strong southwesterly flow across the region, bringing in much warmer air. Same conditions or similar conditions on Wednesday. And then by the, probably by Thursday of next week, we will see another weather system approach from the southwest. And with southwesterly jet stream flow aloft, typically, this is an active weather pattern for the Midwest, and that certainly would include Michigan. That's the next chance, I think, for really significant precipitation. And so the window that we're looking at here, I think, essentially is late Saturday through Wednesday of next week, because by Thursday, there will be the likelihood or certainly a significant probability of showers and thunderstorms. And it probably will, at least it could be significant rainfall with 1/4 to 1/2 inch or greater totals. That's usually a wet type of weather pattern for the region. As we look at our medium range forecast guidance, first let me just real quickly look at the jet stream pattern here. Trough over the western part of the U.S., ridging over the east and the Midwest, southwesterly flow here in Michigan. That is a warm pattern for us without question. And if we look at our actual surface forecast, not surprisingly, warmer than normal mean temperatures are forecast here for the first 5 days of May, and at the same time also above normal precipitation totals. So warmer and wetter than normal, a very, very good bet for most of that first week of the month. However, we're not out of the woods yet, and as we look onto the 8 to 14 day time frame and look at the jet stream pattern, notice here that we have troughing once again, it comes back to the region, to the Midwest and to the east. And along with that, the prospects, or certainly the outlook right after our big warming trend back to cooler than normal temperatures, at least temporarily. I think we're going to be into a flip-flop type of pattern, but at least it's more typical of the spring season than where we've been for the last several weeks. So I think we have an extended break coming. It's not a long break, but it certainly should be enough to get things going. And that's my weather report here for today. Does anyone have any questions?
I guess you were right. You did bring good news, Jeff.
Well, at least better. It's not that not what everybody. So I'm sure someone would like to hear a longer break, but given where we've been, I think this is going to be a very helpful.